Welcome back. You're here with Dave and Faisal on 770 CHQR, and we're joined by Philip Peterson, Chief Investment Strategist at Manulife Investment Management. Now, Philip, of course, we just talked a little bit about where we have come, like what we've come through in 2020, where we are today. Let's get to this big sort of scary concern about the U.S.
It's
election.
The elephant in the room.
That's right. Faisal and I have had lots of conversation, lots of questions over the preceding month for sure about what's going to happen here if there's a change of power. Is a Democratic win mean the end of U.S. equity markets? You know, what's going on here? Give us your perspective on the U.S. election, and let's talk through some of the potential outcomes.
Well, we talk about this every 4 years. Every 4 years, we end up in this conversation with clients and advisors alike on what will a change in power mean for the markets. And we've done a lot of work on this. I've been in this business over 25 years. I've lived through a number of elections and spent countless hours with either conducting my own research on it or listening to others that have been trying to break down policy and gather some type of edge on where the markets could go as a result. And I'll tell you this, my experience is that at the end of the day, it really doesn't matter. We've seen markets perform in any type of political environment in the United States and Canada. And counter to what a lot of people think when they sit there, some people might think that the Democrats, all they want to do is raise taxes and increase socialism, and this has to be bad for the economy. Historically, Democrats have enjoyed stronger returns than Republicans. But that shouldn't mean that we should only want Democrats in power, because guess what? Republicans enjoy positive markets as well, to a little lesser extent than Democrats going back to 1945. But you know, our message to individuals is that, look, regardless of the political environment, markets tend to move higher. And markets move higher because good companies find a way to succeed and grow their profits in any environment. Now, we can talk about the policy. So we can go a little bit deeper into the policies of each of the two candidates. If we look at infrastructure, well, here's something interesting. Both candidates are proposing $1 trillion infrastructure spend. Biden wants to spend it on renewable energy. Trump wants to spend it on roads and bridges. Regardless, spending $1 trillion in the U.S. economy is going to be a positive. Mm-hmm. Now, you know, obviously some sectors will do better than others, but at the end of the day, it's good for the overall marketplace. We can talk about taxes. You know, some people are saying, well, Biden wants to just raise corporate taxes. Yes, and yes, he does, but you know, he wants to raise them to a level that, you know, becomes realistic for the U.S. government. The U.S. government couldn't afford the tax cuts that they just put through. It pushed them into a $1 trillion deficit, going from 32% corporate tax rate down to 21. Biden doesn't want to go back to 32. He wants to go to 28. Now, will this happen? I don't believe that this would happen at all in the first year of his term if he wins. Yep. No one is going to want to raise taxes at the early stages of an economic recovery. If anything, what we're going to see is continued fiscal stimulus for the markets. And even with that in mind, just because let's assume that the Democrats sweep the White House, Senate, and Congress, that doesn't necessarily mean that you're going to get through all the policy that you want. Just because you have an overwhelming majority in each of the houses, you still have to negotiate. You're not necessarily one united party. So right. Some people debate about this. You know, we could see a massive swing to the left. I don't particularly believe that or buy into that. And don't take to heart what is said on the campaign trail. We often say it's like Vegas. What's said on the campaign trail stays on the campaign trail.
Let me jump in there in regards to what we're hearing on the extreme levels. And I think this is where money managers, CIOs or chief investment officers out there, chief investment strategists out there, have to look at the outlying opportunities or positions out there. And one outlying position out there, although we all, the three of us may agree is low probability, but it's on the table that if there is a Democratic sweep or a Biden win, socialism is just around the corner. And everybody's going to be losing their wealth because of it. Let's go down the path that thesis is somewhat accurate, that we are going to see more of a negative impact to the economy. What does somebody do with their portfolio when it comes to that thesis?
Well, first, I think we draw the wrong conclusion, assuming that if we did see a complete turn to a socialist government, that it would be bad for the economy. It wouldn't necessarily be bad for the economy, but there are consequences to it. The consequences would be this. They have to find a way to raise the money to spend, you know, all this money, mm-hmm. and likely the way they would do it is increase debt. Okay? Now, there's a consequence to increased debt. Now, it would likely be higher interest rates and a weaker U.S. dollar. What if we saw a turn in that direction? All that does for me is increase my resolve on owning stocks. Why? Because in an environment where interest rates are going higher because of a falling U.S. dollar and higher inflation, I want to own real assets. I want to own companies that have pricing power, that can increase their prices at least the rate of inflation, to keep up with inflation, to raise their dividends, keep their earnings growing at the same rate as or better than inflation, so keep the real rate of growth constant, and preserve my wealth. So the thought that if we saw a turn in the U.S. to go socialist, that I should dump my stocks, it's actually the opposite. You want to own more because that is the way that you're going to preserve your purchasing power and preserve your wealth going forward.
This is a big fundamental belief, Dave, that people have to understand that good quality companies, good financials of that company, and the understanding of how management works of that company and how they can actually weather every type of economic condition that's thrown at them over the years, you want to be part of that. Unfortunately, the markets is what people talk about. And let's just use basic indexes, S&P 500, TSX. This is a shift. And Philip, do you think this is a shift from passive management of just buying an exchange-traded fund on an index to now active management with all these different potential scenarios coming out?
I think it is, and I also think there are other reasons why we would want to consider active over the course of the next couple of years at least. But to your point, yes, because companies with good management and a successful track record can navigate different environments and shift the business accordingly to ensure future profitability.
And there's a broader issue here too. I mean, we're talking about individual companies here, Faisal, but it's the same for an investor. And I think people have to keep an eye on that. If there was a shift in a political policy or philosophy in any given country, you could move your money out of that country. You can allocate it elsewhere. You can find other companies to invest in. And I think maybe that's the underlying message that we're giving here. There's a number of possibilities that are potential outcomes. You have to narrow down those possibilities of where you think the winners and the losers are.
So let's go through your theory just as an example. If the American government was going to take over every company and make it a national corporation,
right,
you could just move your money out of those companies and move them somewhere else in the world.
You could. That's assuming those companies don't move themselves. Right. So this is the thing. And the headlines become so polarizing. And I think of the conversations we've had this week. We were talking about that before going on air. Becomes so polarizing that we get trapped in these extremes. Right. You get trapped in these emotional extremes. And the fact is, when you look at the data, as Philip does on a regular basis, and you break down the data tells us something very different. Right. It strips away that emotion. And there's so many things that can be done. It's important to stay nimble as an investor so that you could take advantage and or protect depending on what you're trying to do.
Philip, one last question before we have to go to commercial break. With all this volatility, one thing that you and I've talked about time and time again is rebalancing your portfolio. There's been lots of research done that you should just do it once a year, given the type of volatility we're experiencing this year and potentially going into the next year as well. How frequently should you be rebalancing your portfolio?
That's a great question. And, you know, I've done work on that where we look at rebalancing quarterly, semi-annually, or annually. And yeah, actually, from the long-term perspective, rebalancing annually is all you really need to do. However, what we would suggest is that when we see big market moves, like we had at the end of March, or if you get corrections, we didn't quite get one in September, but let's say we saw the market down by more than 10%. That's a good opportunity to rebalance into equities. Likewise, if equities move up, like just rip ahead, mm-hmm. And all of a sudden your asset allocation isn't 60-40, but it becomes 70-30. Well, you're taking on perhaps more equity risk than you normally would. So taking profits and shifting some of that equity weight back into fixed income is a prudent strategy to hold on to those gains and reduce the overall risk in portfolios. So I agree with you. I think once a year is you know what you reasonably could get away with. Mm-hmm. But if you take advantage of the volatility as it comes by, historically, that's a great way to reload into equities. We often talk about, this is a good buying opportunity. But well, what if I'm fully invested? I don't have any cash sitting on the sidelines. What do I do? Well, do you have fixed income? Yes. Rebalance into equities to bring back to your optimal asset allocation weight.
There's always a relative trade to do. We have to leave it there, Philip. Thanks again for your time.
My great pleasure. Thank you.
We're joined by Philip Peterson, Chief Investment Strategist at Manulife Investment Management. My friend, let's put this into English now in our upcoming seminar.
In English. Five-pillar investment strategy.
Yep.
How to maximize return, minimize risk. We're going to talk about that on Tuesday, October 20th, 7 p.m., live online. Go to morethanmoneyradio.com to register. That's morethanmoneyradio.com to register.
All right, let's talk about how to create a supersized TFSA after the break. Stick around for that. You're on 770 CHQR and More Than Money.